Welcome in, Tiger fans. Another week of play-by-play presented by our friends at The Advocate. We've got Harrison Valentine taking care of all the ones and twos. The illustrious Kent Lowe is to my left. And coming up on the show, we're going to have a special guest, Coach Brock, going to join us. We're going to talk beach volleyball, which is just around the corner. Exciting sport. And, of course, LSU is one of the top program, I should say, in the country. Kent, just a little review from last week, another busy week. Then we'll get to what's coming up on the docket this week. I know women's basketball, great event on Thursday. Campus was buzzing. The PMAC was exploding. It was quite an event to behold. It was a great game. I know not the way the Tigers wanted it to finish out, but if you love women's basketball, college basketball, not only was it the place to be, it turned out that that was the thing to be watching because the TV ratings bear that out.
Yeah, highest rated event of the night, going against things like the NBA, and best rating of the night. Huge crowd, sellout crowd at the PMAC. It was a great showcase for basketball, a great showcase for women's basketball, and it was a game that lived up to the pregame hype of this. And college game day, it was great to see all that set up and all that. We're not sure why El King thought the king cake was pulled pork the way she was working at it with her fork. But other than that, what social media went nuts over, I thought it was a great evening. The results, you're right, weren't what LSU fans were hoping for. But I think LSU showed for a good majority of that game they could certainly play and stay with South Carolina. They may have had a little more depth than the Tigers when all was said and done. But I think that's a matchup we'll see one or two more times before this is all over.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about, again, seeing that matchup on Thursday is that I think most fans believe that there's at least another opportunity down the road to see that type of heavyweight battle. Again, South Carolina able to rally late in that contest and head back to Columbia with the win. Monday night, LSU women's basketball at Mississippi State. Important to kind of put that behind you. Again, it's much easier said than done, Kent, when you have that type of atmosphere. But maybe it's better that you go on the road. You get your team out of town, you're in a different hotel, and then you can totally focus on Mississippi State before having a couple of days and then taking on Florida back at home inside the Maravich Center. I think coming off that type of heavyweight battle, the schedule, I think, helps out. I'm not taking anything away from Mississippi State, and not necessarily the games, but I think the way the team can get away, get that behind them, and then come back to the PMAC against Florida this weekend.
Well, you're right, and they will have the Thursday night spot open, much like the men have Wednesday open this week. But obviously, I'm sure it'll be a full house in Humphrey Coliseum tonight. The road games have drawn record crowds along the way. But Sunday's important against Florida. It's an alumni day. We'll see a lot of former Tiger stars back for introductions and things like that during the course of the game. So another good chance to see your Tigers in action, women's basketball team against Florida on Sunday afternoon.
You mentioned, men's basketball. Tough week last week, and in fact, here on the show, we kind of touched on how challenging it would be. Not only because it was two road games with a really close turnaround based on the start times, and then as it turned out, a little bit of travel snafu. It was a really tough turnaround for this coaching staff and team. A tough one at Georgia. Had a chance to win. You and I were in a similar spot. It looked like the shot from Jordan Wright at the buzzer was on point, had the right distance, had the trajectory. Looked good from us, but rattled out at the buzzer. Georgia holds on to win. Get back late. I think most people probably got back to their homes, apartments, dorms, somewhere around the 2:30, 3 a.m. Spot on Thursday morning. And then, again, you got a quick turnaround because you're flying out on Friday for Tuscaloosa. Now, the only saving grace is that it was a 7 o'clock tip-off in Tuscaloosa. But, again, you get home, little bit of rest on Thursday, try to get some practice in, do some corrections, get the film work, and then head back out on the road. And again, Alabama right now, after beating Auburn last Wednesday night, kind of in the driver's seat in the SEC, again, with a third of the conference schedule already behind us, kind of right now it's Alabama that even Tennessee and Auburn are chasing at this point. So you knew you had to play your best game of the season, and that's a tough building to play. It's a staggering stat that since Coleman Coliseum opened and Alabama started playing basketball there against LSU, they've won 83% of those matchups. So every coach I've talked to from Dale Brown to John Brady, and Matt McMahon knows that as well. He's been there twice now. Tough place. And after a great first half, 6-point deficit, LSU in the second half, Alabama just started to hit the threes. A couple of big turnovers led to easy transition buckets, which feeds that Alabama monster. And before we know it, the game got sideways.
Yeah, you're right. We could do a whole podcast episode on SEC travel if we wanted to.
Oh,
but that's another story for another time. But briefly, going back to the Georgia game, it was a game LSU was in for a long time. Then Georgia kind of sprinted away a little bit to an 8-point lead, but credit to LSU, they then scored 9 straight points in the last 2 minutes of that game to get a 1-point lead before the final play. And you're right, Jordan Wright's 3-point shot at the buzzer certainly looked good. Tom Hart, I had talked to, called the game for the network, thought it was in when he was watching from the other side of the court on the television broadcast. And the second half against Alabama at times reminded me of the Auburn game a little bit. The turnovers led to runouts and transition for Alabama. They had 17 fast break points in the second half of the game, and that's where you just get hurt because you just got no response to that because the ball's down court right after you turn it over. So, I mean, that really hurt. I do like the fact that now 4 straight games, LSU has hit double-figure 3-pointers. But if you look at the 2 games last week, the percentage for LSU of 3-pointers is better than their 2-point percentage. And that's where LSU has been better this year, most of the year, shooting something like 67% from 2, but they were only about 40% on layups and on 2-point shots against Georgia and Alabama. And I know that's something that the coaching staff's going to look at and see if they can figure out where there's an issue there.
Well, again, for those of you watching on LSU Gold, Kent, when they have the shot on you, it's almost like double vision. There's another Kent over your shoulder there. See, there he is. Look at there. I don't know which one was talking during that segment. For those who are listening to the audio podcast.
There's a lot of times that people wish I wouldn't talk. So,
you know, again, LSU basketball back at home. It's going to be an early start, by the way, 11 o'clock Central Time. They will tip it inside the Maravich Center. And it's an Arkansas team that has really struggled this year. But a couple of things come to mind, Kent, when I think about this. And two, the first one is Arkansas, whenever they play LSU in anything, they wake up every day trying to figure out how they can beat LSU. So they'll be plenty motivated. But it's also a team that's 1-6 in conference play. So they're a dangerous team that certainly has their back up against the wall, which means they're probably going to give you everything they have. So that's why I think it's an 11 o'clock start. Matt McMahon told me after the game in Alabama, they're well aware of how well they'll have to play, regardless of what the Razorbacks' record is right now. But it's going to be a tough one. And again, I think the PMAC can make a huge difference. I mean, at Coleman, it was an Alabama crowd. Give credit to Georgia at Stegman Coliseum in that tight game. You got to give some kudos to the Georgia fans. So we just invite you to come out. Again, it's a little earlier start, but then you get the rest of your Saturday. You get the afternoon and the evening. It's LSU and Arkansas at 11 o'clock. Speaking of Razorbacks, going to be plenty of Arkansas Razorbacks here in Baton Rouge because before the men's game on Saturday morning, well, the Arkansas gymnastics team will be at the PMAC taking on LSU. That one getting started at 7:30, and a very pivotal opportunity for Jay Clark's team at home once again.
Yeah, Coach Clark is meeting with the media as we're taping this, and I'm sure he's going over some of the issues from Friday night in Missouri. If you read his quotes on the paper, you know he wasn't happy with some of the things that happened. LSU took some missteps in the meet. They had a chance to win, couldn't do it. Missouri had a tremendous meet and ended up getting out of there on the last floor routine with the win. As was pointed out several times on the broadcast, that's how more and more of these SEC meets are being decided, on the last tumbling pass on the floor or on the last routine on the beam, and that was certainly the case Friday night. So I know they'll want to come home in front of the home fans. They had 198 2 weeks ago when that one happened, when they beat Kentucky. So I know they'll be looking for another big home score this coming Friday night, 7:30. And so a good opportunity for everyone to come out to the Assembly Center on Friday night.
Yeah, it should be a great weekend to be here on campus Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So hope you'll join us. And real quick before we go to break, speaking of our buddy Tom Hart, who called the game not only at Georgia but at Alabama, he was also here for the Texas A&M. I told him after the game, I got to write somebody. I got to tell somebody. He's out for a while. I mean, he's done the last three games, and the results have not been good for the Tigers. So I think Tom needs to go find another team to jinx. All right. We're going to turn the page on this week's show, and we're going to talk beach volleyball. Again, as I mentioned, LSU, one of the top programs in the country, and they've done it in a very short amount of time. And the reason is, well, we'll find out. He's going to be sitting right here. Coach Russell Brock will join us on Play-by-Play after this break. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody, on this week's show. Again, Play-by-Play, presented by our friends at The Advocate. As we told you in the first segment, going to talk LSU beach volleyball because we are really just counting down the days till the season begins. I've said it three times now, Kent, on the show today, that LSU beach volleyball, one of the top programs in the country, and has just came out like a monster. I mean, just out of the blue. And I'm sure for every other program, established program, it seems like in seconds they went from a program to being one of the dominant forces. But we are pleased once again to have on the show Coach Russell Brock join us. And Coach, I know I don't need to remind you, but the season is coming up. I know you guys are making plans and preparations and probably excited, the staff and the team, to get out there and play in 2024.
For sure. You know, it's one of those things, just like everybody else, it seems like forever since we, you know, actually had our toes in the sand and, you know, mixing it up against somebody with a different color jersey on. But we're excited. It's getting closer, and it feels like it for sure.
Last year, 27-13, another run into the NCAAs. When the season ended, take us back a few months, and then you start to assess, here's what we need to do. These are the next steps for our program. This is where we want to see growth. Kind of what was up on your board, checklist, going into the 2024 season?
Yeah, you know, in collegiate athletics, roster turnover is always the biggest issue. And, you know, with transfer portal and all the fun stuff we got going on these days, it is a little even more unpredictable. So, you know, when the season ended, we knew we were going to lose, you know, some of our players, and we ended up losing basically half of our starting lineup. And the challenging piece was we lost all our blockers. So we play blocker defender in most of our pairs, so we lost all of our blockers, so the taller versions of what we've got going on. So we knew that while we had a lot returning, a lot of really talented defenders returning, we would have to replace quite a few people. So part of that was transfer portal on our end, and part of it was the recruiting process, and knowing what we had already coming in, and then to start to prepare, developing that chemistry and understanding of who's going to play with each other was a big part of the equation moving from last May until, you know, coming up on this end of February.
Again, it'll be February 17th. You'll have purple and gold scrimmage. That's on a Saturday. At the beach volleyball complex, which we've talked about on this show. You and I have talked about it in other situations. What a great, intimate, yet exciting place you guys get to play, which I think probably helps when you got to go find somebody out of the portal or find somebody coming out of the high school ranks. But we'll talk more about the purple and gold event coming up. From a recruiting standpoint, it seems like LSU, and Kent and I talk about it every week with every coach we have on the program, on the show, is that their program, their sport within their conference or just within the country, is just growing at an exponential rate. From recruiting hotbeds, not necessarily the transfer portal, where are those places across the country where that's where the beach volleyball players are coming from? Is that widening? Are there more areas than there were 10 years ago?
Yeah, I think generally you're always going to look to California, Florida, as, you know, they're the coast with, you know, the tradition of beach volleyball. That's just what they do, a lot of them growing up. As far as where the hotbeds have developed, I mean, Texas, anytime you're looking for athletes, Texas always has a great supply. And whatever the sport is, that's, you know, where they're going to end up coming from a lot of times. I was just there this weekend recruiting in San Antonio, and there were a lot of Texas kids who were there who play in the sport at a really, really high level. The weekend before, I was in Arizona. You know, there really isn't, you can't, you know, really contain the talent level anywhere just because it is growing. Even, you know, there's Ohio, there's really big pockets. I mean, all over the country, there's lots of places that are just gravitating towards the sport, and it's growing exponentially, and that's great for the programs that are looking to add, you know, youth players coming up out of the high school ranks.
I know this year will be the final year that the NCAA is in Gulf Shores, which I hate to see that, mm-hmm. because it's been such an LSU festival, it seems, when they come there. But I mean, over the years it's been in Gulf Shores, the growth of the sport, the growth of the television coverage, the growth of everything with that NCAA event, it has become a huge, huge deal that people are really into now. And I think that's another part of the growth of the sport the last few years.
I completely agree. You know, and I think being in Gulf Shores, especially in the Southeast, we have just locally, we have a lot of people that kind of plan around that event. I have people all the time just calling me up and say, hey, we got a condo that weekend, so make sure y'all get there. I say, we'll do our best.
Hey, don't need any more pressure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. But it's a great place to have it, and I agree with you. It's going to be challenging when it kind of moves out to California, and hopefully it's not the end of it, because they'll have a little stretch where they'll be there, and then it'll go up for rebid. And I just think it's going to be hard for anybody to really compete with what Gulf Shores has committed to doing as a city. To put on an event that's just a lot of fun.
Well, it's so out there, and it's literally on the beach. You see the water and all. I mean, it's just a very nice set. I don't know. Have you seen what Huntington's planning?
They haven't really unveiled a whole lot yet, so I hope they're working hard to put something together, though.
You know, it's interesting because you hear that all the time. I mean, I always think back to the College World Series in Omaha. Okay, it's the center, I guess you could say, a central location. But again, the city of Omaha, especially, even I know a lot of people, especially LSU fans, don't like the new stadium as opposed to Rosenblatt. And I understand that from a traditional standpoint. But give the city some credit. They built the downtown area now around the new facility that we play in, which means once you get to downtown, you're done. You can walk to this, and you go to that, you go to the game, you can, I mean, it's just a great location. And I often think maybe there's always a want to move a venue to get something new, try something new, but sometimes there is some value in especially when a municipality and a city says, we want to own this and we're going to put the infrastructure to keep it. Was it more of a location, hey, it's too difficult for those on the West Coast, or too difficult for even teams out of the Northeast? Is that the reasoning behind making this initial move?
Yeah, they didn't ask me, so you know, otherwise I could tell you exactly what happened. But I do know that they do open it for bid, and there's always going to be a draw to have it on the West Coast. There's a lot of teams that play out there, and the West Coast teams that have to get to Gulf Shores, they're – you know, probably saying, hey, what about our time?
Yeah.
So I think they'll share the wealth, but I do hope at some point after you've seen both places, maybe you have to get a third venue, but it becomes evident, like, there's no place that can really put it on and passionately support it like the city of Gulf Shores. And it's kind of that same feel. There's plenty of housing, lodging that's nearby, lots of places that fans can stay, teams can stay, and you can kind of get that walk-around feel that you might get, you know, at the Baseball World Series. So we'll see. Maybe at some point, 20 years from now, we'll look back and say, every year is in Gulf Shores because they just do it do it better than anybody else can.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask you from a technical standpoint, coaching standpoint, you're going to be going to Huntington, and we expect LSU to be there. When you play on the beach for teams that don't play the majority of their regular season meets on the beach, because I've watched you guys on television over there in Gulf Shores, and I'm thinking to myself as I watch the – I mean, I've been there, so I know what the wind is like. Sure. But I watch the flags, and I'm thinking, how do you guys adjust to that? I mean, obviously you play outside, so there is wind, but it's a little different when you're on the coast, and it's usually roaring one way or the other all day long.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we try and get to the beach a few times during our season, because it's different. I mean, there's lots of things that are different, and people who play in it all the time are going to be more comfortable in that environment. We have... Even as we've all experienced in the last few weeks, we have some windy days. And those windy days we dedicate to really trying to make sure we understand the challenges and the advantages that can come from that wind. So it's all about training, and mostly it's about mentality. You know, when you get in that space and the wind starts blowing, you either freak out because, hey, this is more challenging, or you're like, hey, this is what we do when we're in this environment. We know how to attack it. We know how to use it. We know what other people are going to do with it, and we play our game no matter what's happening. And the better you can handle that, then the better you'll be able to play in the conditions.
Before we talk about some of the specific players and what you've seen so far, you've had some players come from indoor volleyball to the beach season. How tough is that for them when they first come out after playing indoors for a couple of years and maybe want to get into the beach scene a little sure. bit? How tough is that transition for someone who's a good indoor player to make that transition?
Yeah, we're real open because we've actively recruited. Lots of those players have been some really, really good ones who have helped us become who we are. But those conversations initially, you got to be real honest and say, look, you're one of the best players in the country at doing what you do, and you're going to come out here and you're going to be angry for about 2 months. You're an All-American. You can get your hitting percentage. All of these things that are really easy for you are going to become really hard immediately, and you're going to see people who aren't as tall as you, you know, don't have as many accolades as you, who are going to be able to run circles around you literally and figuratively. And once you get past those 2 months, if you're able to maintain the mentality every day that I'm going to train, I'm going to get better, I'm going to figure this out, coaches are going to help me, we're going to work really, really hard, you'll close that gap and then you'll be fine. But if you get bent out of shape from day one because you can't do what you used to be able to do, and it looks the same, it's, you know, the sport, it kind of looks similar, but it's just really not. So until you understand the differences that need to happen, how you can take your skills and tools and change them, use them, and learn new ones to then become successful, you have to be able to survive that gap of time. And once you do, you'll be fine. But if you can't survive that gap, then you'll kind of get in that rabbit hole, and you may never come out.
Because you're doing everything. You're digging, you're hitting, you're blocking. I mean, it's all over the place.
For sure.
Yeah.
Setting, everything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about this team, because you do have some All-Americans returning, Shank and Alfred among them, and some other players. But who has kind of stood out early on in practice for you?
Yeah, I think – you know, we've got a good group of upperclassmen leaders that are really doing a great job for us. And, you know, those are the returners who have been in the lineup for a few years. And, you know, even with who've been around since, you know, COVID. So they've seen lots of really great leaders come through, and some who stayed maybe longer than they expected. So their ability to be kind of in the driver's seat and lead this program has been delayed. And I've been super excited to see how they've responded to this year. Being able to step into those shoes, and that's, like you said, you know, Riley and Ellie, like you mentioned, and Parker Bracken's another one who's been phenomenal and has really stepped into that role. Even like Brooke Blutrick, who hasn't had a major presence in the lineup, now is a senior and has been doing really great things.
Is it more now just in these like purple gold, and as you move through the early part of your schedule, trying to find the combinations that work best for this team over the long haul?
Yep. Over the fall, that was the major, you know, task. We had a lot of new players, and we have our returners, but we had no pairs that were returning. So to figure out, you know, who our pairs are going to be, and really the main goal, even right now, what we're going through is to find a starting point. Like, you have to find a starting point. Inevitably, there's going to be changes as we go through the season, mainly because we don't know how these pairs are going to perform in competition. We know how they perform in practice. So as we're looking at potential combinations, we'll get to a starting point, and then we'll see how that goes against somebody else. And, you know, we will have some good backup plans as far as where we'll end up.
And you have, and just you may have, and you have had dominant teams up at the top of your lineup. But to win these duels, you've got to have a little depth down the line to get you that final point sometimes you need to advance.
Sure. I think that's really the beauty of the sport is you can have all-stars. You know, you can have superstars even. But as a team, they can't carry you. They don't have the ability. You know, you could have a team, two teams go undefeated all season, and you could never win a match. So it's a really unique situation, and one that values the depth of the program. And in that scenario, you've got lots of people who can contribute, and you're looking for that great vibe more than anything else to give us the best chance to win all through the lineup, as opposed to just trying to focus on, you know, trying to win a couple here or there. We need to have the best chance to win at all five flights.
Coach, you, again, the success of LSU Beach Volleyball has been really fun to watch. And I know that a lot of it has to do with you, and deservedly so. But I wanted to give you a chance to not only talk about in this transition year that you guys just discussed with some roster turnover, about your staff. I know you have two assistant coaches, two Katies, if I'm
right.
One with a C.
I tried to make it really simple.
One with a C and one with a K, yes. But two Katies. But talk about how you guys kind of divvy up what needs to be done to get this team ready, to bring those new pieces together and be ready to go coming up here in late February.
Sure. I think we have a great collaboration. I think that they're – and the great thing about both Katies is that they both played for me. They've grown up in our system. When they started playing beach volleyball, the first time they ever did it was within our program, within our system. And we do things a little bit differently, but that's all they know. So I can really trust them to understand, not just from the coaching side of things, but from the player side of things, maybe the challenges that come, how to address them. And they both have great personalities. They're not cookie cutter, you know, images of each other. So they can reach into a player's psyche or their personality, depending upon which one of them, maybe even better than the other. So we have it's been fun this year, probably more fun than it's been maybe ever, to have them both out there every day, and they help with practice planning. They have drills that they love to run. Even as a positionally, Katie Leek was a blocker and Katie Dickens was a defender. So they have the ability to really take those two groups and personally invest in them and push them in ways that that maybe the other one can't. So it's been fun. Our team has really benefited from their energy on how they play off of each other. They're great friends as well. So just a great opportunity for them to model, you know, friendship and honor and all the things that we want to have within our program as a coaching staff. It's been great.
You know, Kent, looking at beach volleyball schedule once again, a little reminiscent.
Who made this schedule is what I want to know. Reminiscent, it looks tough.
A little reminiscent of our conversations with men's golf and women's golf. We picked the wrong sports to cover. You and I are in Gainesville and College Station, and maybe we ought to pick, jump on board with beach volleyball. But I did want to talk about the schedule a little bit. You mentioned that you try to get some opportunity in a beach setting, knowing that that's where the season, postseason will end up. But I know there's trips to Houston. I'd really like to get involved in that Manhattan Beach trip to California. Also South Carolina, Atlanta. Talk about how you develop this particular schedule, knowing the team that you would have on paper,
sure,
to help them be able to culminate and get the momentum they need come postseason time.
Yeah, I think that we've always, the vision has been, we're trying to get the best competition we can play. I mean, it really doesn't help us to go out and not be challenged or to not play teams that are going to try and beat us. So we don't ever go into a schedule looking for, you know, okay, how can we get a certain number of wins? We want to get as many tough matches as we can possibly get for real tests so that we can see where we need to improve, or we can see where we're great or maybe where we're really bad, and have the opportunity to you know, make changes and improve in the ways that we need to. And really the teams that matter, the ones that we want to beat in the big picture, are the ones who are going to be at Gulf Shores, or the ones that we feel like are quality wins or quality competitions that are going to give us either data or experience towards the matches that are going to be in Gulf Shores at the national championship.
Now, the one that strikes me, and there's about a 3-week period in March where I think everybody you play is ranked in the top 25. I mean, it's going to be amazing when you go to Manhattan Beach, but you got three events here at the stadium, and that one March 29th and 30th, that's an amazing field. USC, UCLA, California, Stanford, TCU, FSU, who's the other one? Florida Atlantic? Is that the other one?
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, the COVID year you had UCLA here?
Yep.
And it was jammed at the stadium. This is going to be another one, I think, where it's going to be you better get there early and get a seat. It's going to be wild that weekend.
Yeah, we hope so. I think that, you know, that's, in my opinion, this will be, other than the national championship, it'll be the most amazing event in college beach volleyball this year. So to have, of those eight teams, you're probably talking eight of the top 10 teams in the country. FAU is the one that's kind of come on late, and they had a great run last year, and they're going to be just as good this year. And so if you can only make one event
yes,
this year, definitely that would be the one to make. It's going to be there every time we talk about it anywhere around the country. The people who know what's going to be happening, they're like, we have to get there. We just have to get there and watch that weekend. All the matches are going to be knocked down, drag out. The best of beach volleyball in the country is going to be happening in Baton Rouge that weekend.
Yeah, I love the name. Death Volley Invitational. Again, yep. The starts on March 29th. Again, not to put you on the spot, but just to kind of recap, I mean, a great field coming to Baton Rouge in that particular get-together. I mentioned USC, Florida State, I think, in Tallahassee the week prior in mid-March, late March. The contest in Atlanta at Georgia State. Is that against Georgia State, or is there a field of teams, or is that just you and the Panthers?
No, there'll be a field of teams. It'll be same thing. We'll go in there, play four or five matches, and, you know, just do it in Atlanta. And they've got a fun little setup in downtown Atlanta. It's really unique, and it's another cool, fun place to play. So,
how about the one in Columbia at the Palmetto Invitational, South Carolina?
That'll be same thing. There'll be a group of teams that'll be in there, so we'll get to play four or five in a couple days, and they've got a nice setup as well. Not quite as nice as ours, of course. But,
of course.
Yeah, but it'll be fun to go up there and play for a little SEC pride.
I was showing someone earlier, probably last month, I guess it was, some friends came in town. I was showing them around, and I go, "This used to be our tennis stadium," and they're like, "What? Huh? How?" I go, "Yep, for years it was. Now it is the showplace of college volleyball, and I know you're proud of that." Let me just go off the beaten path just a touch. It's an Olympic year. We got a couple of former players that could be in Paris.
Sure.
Yeah, we were thinking the same thing. I wanted to get an update on some of the great players, the alum of LSU Beach Volleyball.
Sure.
Yeah, get us up to date, Coach.
Yeah, we've got some great players out there doing some really fun things. But Taryn and Kristen, you know, have continued their excellence. You know, I think that we knew, obviously, when they were here how great they were. I mean, they were undefeated their last year, and Taryn was undefeated the year before, and Kristen had set the NCAA Beach win record. So we knew, obviously, they could be really good. It doesn't necessarily always translate in any sport to guaranteed success at the professional level. But they have not stopped. And they picked up right where they left off. They're the number one ranked team in the United States. And I think they're two in the country or in the world right now in the Olympic qualification. And basically a shoe-in to be in Paris and competing. They just won the professional league. That's the highest honor. They won the championship there, and they finished third in the world championship. So that's all been within the past 6 months, and it's really fun.
How much has college beach volleyball in the last several years helped the professional game? The success of the NCAA sport helped the professional beach game?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's undeniable, particularly in the United States. I mean, we have quite a few international players, but a lot of the best international players from other countries, they're professional before they even get college aged. So a lot of the very, very best from other countries don't end up playing in the NCAA. There are several that currently play that or have recently played college that are the best in their countries as well. But from the United States, you know, if Taryn and Kristen are the number one pair, they obviously played together at LSU. The number two pair played together at USC when they were there in college. So it's undeniable. Just even with that small, like, let's look at the small glimpse of the professional sports within the United States, that both of the top pairs within our country played together in college, you know, less than 5 years ago.
We have some breaking news that you Tiger football fans are going to want to hear. SeatGeek is now the official ticket marketplace of LSU Athletics. Whether you're buying or selling football tickets, SeatGeek is the place to do it. SeatGeek, so Tiger fans can fan.
Well, from our opinion, as always, Russell Brock, LSU's lucky to have the best college beach volleyball coach in the country. Before I let you go, we kind of touched on the purple and gold that is coming up to kind of indicate, let you guys go at each other out there at the volleyball complex, but also kind of indicate the start of the season. For those who have not taken in a match, we talked about the great facility. What's the experience like? I get a ticket, I walk through the door. What can I expect if I've never been there for a match? We know top-notch beach volleyball, but what else is the atmosphere like?
Well, I think depending upon what you're looking for, there's a lot of really fun things that are going on. You're for sure going to get music the entire time. And, you know, hopefully if the weather cooperates, you're going to get sun. And, you know, if you're there for the nighttime matches, those are a blast to play under the lights. There's, once again, no place like it. And if it's Friday night or Saturday night lights, it's just a blast, a lot of energy. And if you haven't been at all to anywhere where they play beach volleyball, probably what's going to hit you is it's really busy. There's a lot of action going on. Within our match, there's going to be at least three individual matches that are happening at the same time. So you can watch whichever, if they're in a timeout, you can look at that one. If they're in a timeout, you can look at this one. So you can always see lots going on. Sometimes there are six matches happening at one time, depending upon the schedule. And we got a big scoreboard, so you can keep track of what's happening. And typically we'll have somebody who's kind of on the mic that's going to help point you in the direction of maybe the things you should be paying attention to or explaining what things just happened. It's just kind of how our sport works, that we have an MC that that does a great job of usually kind of directing traffic, so to speak, and get to enjoy some really, really good volleyball playing.
Well, purple and gold scrimmage comes up, as we mentioned from the outset, on Saturday, February 17th. Then they'll get underway on the 23rd in Houston with the Third Coast Classic. And then I guess the official first home matches will be March 2nd and 3rd. Tiger Beach Challenge again. If you haven't taken one in, you need to. You're missing out if you don't. Ken, do you agree?
I would certainly agree.
Ken gives two thumbs up.
Should be fun. They're always fun to watch. Jeez, it's entertaining, and this team is really good. And I mean, when you consider the short time LSU has really had a program compared to some other places, the progress they continue to make is really fabulous. And Russell, you've just done an amazing staff job, you and your staff, with what you've done with this program and with this stadium, and everything about this program is really first class.
Yeah, remarkable. Truly remarkable, Coach. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck this season. So Russell Brock has been our guest this week. Coach, again, we'll be out there for the scrimmage. And then certainly, Kent, we'll get some time, you know, once basketball settles down, we'll get some time. Maybe you and I go take one together.
I will be sure and make that big one at the end of March.
All right. Sounds good. Coach, again, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us again. Looking forward to it this season.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right. That's going to wrap up this week's show. Again, my thanks to Harrison Valentine, of course, Coach Russell Brock, taking time out to give us an update on LSU Beach Volleyball, and the illustrious Kent Lowe with his just tons and tons of wisdom on every sport that LSU plays. Couldn't do this show without him. And we'll be back here next week to do the same thing. So until then, this is Chris Blair saying so long, everybody, and go Tigers.